Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning, August 21st. Happy birthday to my dear brother, Dan Liguori. Hey, glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 7 to 8. And you can hear us live on WLIW.org/radio online. And each show is archived on my website at AnneLiguori.com and sent out via podcasts. Also on my website, you can watch my classic TV interviews with all kinds of legends from Mickey Mantle, Ted Williams, Will Chamberlain, Jim Brown, Billie Jean King, Arthur Ashe, Sam Snead, Gordie Howe, Bart Starr. You name it, you can watch these classic sports interview cable shows on my newly designed website at AnneLiguori.com. Well, this morning, we will learn all about Liberty National Golf Club in Jersey City, New Jersey, which offers just a spectacular view of the Manhattan skyline and the Statue of Liberty. It is the venue for this weekend's Northern Trust PGA Tour stop, the first of three tournaments in the season-ending FedEx Cup playoffs, in which the winner will earn a $15 million bonus. Just incredible money. And all the top players are playing this week, and then it's cut down to next week's event, and then it's cut down for the third time for the tour championships, and then big money for the very last guy standing, basically, $15 million. Unbelievable. I also like to get a variety of perspectives on this sports interview show, as you regular listeners know, and so this morning, you'll hear my conversation with Liberty National's executive chef, Sean Christopher Lewis, who is also the club's assistant general manager. Lewis and his team have a challenging task, pleasing a very discerning membership, right? Food and wine lovers, golf enthusiasts. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts at these private clubs. And Sean talks about how they are able to achieve this. And then particularly during this week of the Northern Trust, you know, what it's like with, you know, Phil Mickelson's a member. He's there. The actor Mark Wahlberg is a member. Sean tells some fun stories. And then he also talks about the honeybee colony that he cultivated on the grounds of the course, which is fascinating to me. And, you know, that requires a lot of knowledge. And he got a degree just to learn how to do that. So I think this guy has more degrees than anybody I know in the culinary world, business world, and now the honeybee world as well. You'll also hear from the club's director of agronomy, Greg James, on what goes on to maintain the course that is situated on the shore there by the Hudson River overlooking Lower Manhattan and the Statue of Liberty, and how he and his team prep the layout for the top players in the game who are there this weekend. One sports story that caught my attention happened earlier this week when tennis star Naomi Osaka was actually at the Western Southern Open in Mason, Ohio. She was talking to reporters in a press conference format, I think on Zoom, for the first time, apparently, after withdrawing from the French Open in May for mental health reasons, she has said, and saying she did not want to participate in news conferences. So one of the questions at this Cincinnati press conference came from a Cincinnati Inquirer columnist, Paul Daugherty, who then got labeled by Osaka's agent calling him a bully. The question apparently led to Osaka becoming visibly emotional, and apparently she walked out for a little bit of the press conference and came back in. But, you know, when I did my research and read the transcripts, I honestly do not think the question was unfair. I didn't think it was asked in a malicious way. And, you know, I think it's uncalled for that this sports agent actually called the reporter a bully. The question that this sports reporter asked was, "You're not crazy about dealing with us, especially in this format, yet you have a lot of outside interests that are served by having a media platform. I guess my question is, how do you balance the two? And also, do you have anything you'd like to share with us about what you did say to Simone Biles?" Earlier in the press conference, apparently, Osaka said She had sent a message to Biles, but said she wanted to give her space because I know how overwhelming it can feel. Certainly, I have a lot of empathy and sympathy for both Simone Biles, who was feeling extreme stress and pressure at the Olympics, and she pulled out of all the events, but you know, the one individual balance beam event, citing the twisties. And I understand that. I mean, she just you know, mentally said she just wasn't feeling it, and her moves are so dangerous on that level that I actually admire Simone Biles, you know, for pulling out. It took a lot of courage. But I don't admire Naomi Osaka's agent calling this sports reporter a bully. I know Osaka is obviously very sensitive. She's shy. She's obviously dealing with a variety of issues. I hope she'll be okay, and I hope she's getting professional help. But these press conferences are the only places that the media has an opportunity to talk with these top athletes. And if she doesn't want to handle these press conferences, that's her prerogative. I guess, you know, obviously she'll get fined for that. And the other course of action could be for her to just say no comment, or I just don't want to answer that question. So she has that option as well. I just think her representatives need to handle, you know, her whole situation better, and maybe coach her a little better on how to deal with any questions she might, you know, feel uncomfortable about answering. And they shouldn't be calling, you know, these media reporters bullies. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back and learn all about Liberty National. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is Greg James, the Director of Agronomy here at Liberty National Golf Club, and it is Northern Trust Week. So it's the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, and Greg's a little busy, so we're very delighted that he's found some time for us. Welcome to Sports Interview.
Thank you, Anne.
So I'm so fascinated with the work that goes on in preparing a golf course for a PGA Tour event. Talk a little bit about what you and your team have been doing just to get it in top shape.
Well, I mean, all year long, we always try to have it in top shape for our membership. But when you get closer to an event like this, we try to really tweak it. And our mowing schedules increase on the greens. Our rolling schedules increase on the greens. And then when the tournament gets real close, we bring in about 70 volunteers to come in from around the country and around the world to help out. And, you know, then we're mowing every day, really fine-tuning all the details on the golf course to get ready for the 4 days of the event.
Wow, that's a big effort. You bring them from all over the country to help you out. So you have a team of how many?
Well, there's a team of about 25 of us on staff year-round, and that makes it work really well for our membership and all the details we have to do for them.
So explain, to try to describe Liberty National to my radio audience, what it's like here, just from a topography standpoint, and maybe starting with the view, which is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, after coming from Plainfield Country Club, where I was golf course superintendent for 15 years, and having the opportunity to work for the Fireman family and build this property, it was really exciting to see it from the scratch, starting in May of 2005 when construction started. And then just coming from more of a interior golf course with a lot of trees, and now I'm at a place where you can see the Empire State Building, now the Freedom Tower, and New York City skyline. It's just incredible.
So how does that present itself when it comes to preparing the golf course? Is there any difference? I mean, as you say, you are mostly, you know, working at Plainfield, which is has tons of trees and a lot of different topography. Here we're right by the Hudson River. It's somewhat Lynx-like in some parts, parkland in other parts. What's it like out there?
Well, it's, you know, it's similar grass species-wise, but, you know, being a modern golf course and all the modern amenities as compared to Plainfield, which was built over 100 years ago, we have all the technology here to help, you know, bring the golf course to pristine conditions on a daily basis. With the way it was built, it's very tight. you know, so you have to have a great shot down the middle, you know, to get onto the fairways and stay out of the links kind of fescue that we have throughout the property.
So what's the most challenging aspect? Is it narrow fairways? Is it the greens? Is it the whole package? Getting in the rough, the high grass? What presents itself here as the most challenging?
I would say the narrowness of the fairways and just making sure that your ball's going straight, you know, for the tournament. And then with being right on the Hudson, the wind. You know, Bob and Tom designed a course where the first hole goes south, second hole goes east, the third hole goes west, and the fourth hole goes north. So you're always having wind direction changes, and then you got to start thinking, you know, what kind of club I have to use on this certain hole depending on the way the wind is blowing.
Right. I mean, every time I've played here, including a couple weeks ago, there was always wind. So you just have to get used to wind, right? But having it blow in different directions on different holes like that, that's what becomes most challenging for even the professionals who, you know, have to decide, okay, what am I going to use? How does it differ from the last hole? That's interesting that, you know, you do have all that crosswind, especially I was reading on 14th is that par 3, gorgeous hole along the water, right?
Yep.
But you could have so many different wind directions on just that short hole, right? Which makes it quite treacherous.
Yeah, because you're out there in the, you know, right along the water, and it's swirling. You know, a lot of the morning winds come out of the northwest, and then all of a sudden you'll have that shift coming out of the north or southeast, and you just don't know what to do. What kind of iron you want to hit in there?
Right.
Just 155-yard par 3 hole.
Right. It's such a spectacular hole, scenery-wise, too, but it's quite challenging. I mean, it's short, as you say, 150, but as you know, with the wind, it's very, very, you can get very confused as to what club to hit there. What about some of the other signature holes? Can you talk about some of your favorite, maybe some of the more challenging holes?
Well, I like the last three holes. You know, you have 16, 17, 18. 16 is a reachable par 4, so you get up to the tee and you're like, oh, I can get to that green, you know, and possibly get a, you know, an eagle on it. And then 17, when you're hitting back, slight dog leg right back into the statue with the fescue surrounding the fairway, it's just picturesque. And then 18 coming back towards the clubhouse. You know, it's such a unique clubhouse with the glass and a great finishing hole with a false frontal in the front of it. If you hit the shot in, your ball, you know, could have a chance to hit the approach and roll all the way back down about 30 yards from the green.
Right, because isn't that, it's an elevated green on 18, the finishing hole.
Yes, it's an elevated green, and it's one of those greens that we you know, had to rebuild about 4 times since opening the club. You know, it was a long par 4 originally, and then we shortened it up a little bit when new construction of the clubhouse was built, and when the tournaments all started coming in, so we shifted it a little bit to the right, you know, to get better shot values in from the fairway.
So what are your memories of some of the previous PGA Tour events here? The Northern Trust a couple years ago, it used to be the Barclays, then the President's Cup. Tell me some of the memories that you have of some of these big events here.
Well, starting in 2009 was my first tournament to run, and it was kind of really exciting, you know, brand new course, only being 3 years old, and having all the top 125 players around the world come in and see the club, see how they played it, and then get their feedback, and with the Fireman family and their excitement about hosting future events, we came in, listened to their ideas, you know, and softened some of the places they thought were a little too difficult, and then we made some places that were a little too easy more difficult, just to keep it challenging. And then when they came back in 2013, you know, the score went from 9 under par to only 11 under par, and then we changed the rough. We have that ability to change the different heights of the rough, being a low-mow bluegrass. The first event was 4 inches, and then the second event, we started mowing everything down to 1.5 inches and only had 4-inch rough around the greens. So we have a lot of change we can do with these events. The President's Cup came in. That was my most exciting event. It was spectacular time of the year, the end of September. The wind was blowing. It's a match play event. And you only have 24 players, so it was a lot easier to take care of. We were able to sleep in a little bit in the morning and then get out here and get the job done before the play went. But that event, we mowed everything in the rough at an inch and a half throughout the whole property. So it made it, you know, a better match play golf course.
So knowing the course as well as you know it, obviously, working on it day in and day out, and knowing the players here on the PGA Tour, this layout favors whom, would you say? Or how many of these guys? Can you name a couple?
It's going to favor the guy that's going to be able to hit the ball straight and then think around the greens, because you have to position yourself to, you know, tuck it, you know, because the way they set the golf course up, tucking some of the pins around some of the corners on the greens, you know, you need to know where to land the ball so it funnels towards the hole. But, I mean, you know, my favorite player is always Phil. So, and, you know, I hope he does really well this week.
Well, he has a short game, as you're saying, that is required to deal with these tricky greens. And he knows the golf course, obviously. So I think Phil would be a good pick. How about Patrick Reed, who's won here before? He has an incredible short game. I kind of think he might do well this week.
Yeah, Patrick's a great player. I mean, he has the fire to always win every week. And when he won in 2019, you know, it's really exciting to have him as our champion back then. And when we came up to the green, my whole crew, he was so excited for us, you know, told us how well the golf course played and was a real gentleman.
That must be very satisfying. I wouldn't assume every player does that, right? I mean, for him to give you guys that kind of credit, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we get a lot of compliments, you know, throughout the week, you know, depending on the weather and how people are playing. But when Patrick won in 2019, it was really exciting to have a Masters champion win the golf course. I mean, back in 2013, we had Adam Scott come up here after he won the Masters also. So, you know, it seems like whoever wins the Masters before our event seems to come to the Liberty National and become the champion.
So are you going to pick somebody?
I root for them all. I just want them to have a fabulous time here and, you know, have a great week and, you know, look forward to another future event from whoever's going to come in first place.
Does Paul Fireman ever come around? Do you ever see the co-founder?
Mr. Fireman's always here. I mean, he's a great visionary. You know, he saw this piece of property. He saw what can become of this place. And the development that's going to happen here in the future is just—it's going to be outstanding.
I was talking to Sean about the colony of honeybees that you're very involved with. Talk about your participation in that, and it sounds—it's unique to really have a colony of honeybees at golf course. I know Sabonic does, but there's not that many golf courses around the country that does that, right?
Well, there's quite a few. I have a lot of friends that do it. You know, my friend up at Oak Hill has a colony of bees. And with Sean, Sean's our head beekeeper, so I'm just his assistant. You know, I just go out there and do all the heavy lifting for him. And he's the technique guy that takes care of those little bees and makes sure they're producing a lot of honey for the inside the kitchen.
I just think that's so great to have that kind of expertise, you know, because it does require a tremendous amount of expertise. Greg, what for my audience who, you know, for anybody out there who is interested in agronomy and becoming perhaps a golf course superintendent, what's the training required for that?
Well, you have to have the passion. I'm a graduate of Penn State University, and it's a fantastic program, but there's a lot of great other programs. You know, locally, Rutgers University has an incredible turf grass program, and there's a lot of opportunity for people to grow in this position, you know, in agronomy, and you're outside all the time. You get to meet great people and work for great people. And, I mean, there's a lot of job opportunities that are available throughout the country and throughout the world. So it's a very unique thing to be able to be a part of. And, I suggest to a lot of our guys, we get interns from around the country, to keep moving on and see what other superintendents do so you learn your own technique. And eventually, you know, they'll be up in my spot.
Well, that's great advice. And every place is so different depending on location, you know, climate, obviously. What are your particular challenges here in, you know, it's an urban location, right? You're by the Hudson River. It was on an area that was practically a toxic wasteland at one point, right? So what are your particular challenges here as an agronomist?
Well, the way the property was built, it was all remediated, you know, it was all cleaned up, and, you know, it was more of a brownfield with buildings on it, and, you know, there was an oil refinery, but it's all done and cleaned up. But, I mean, basically, you're growing grass, and you're dealing with Mother Nature, so that's a, you know, she can throw a curveball at you. You just have to pay attention to what's going on with her, especially like what's happening this week. Coming up, we have Tropical Storm Fred coming up, which could affect the golf course a little bit during Thursday and Friday. But, you know, we're all hoping that this high off the East Coast is going to push it west of us, and then we're going to have a great weekend.
So just say there is a lot of rain. As an agronomist, what's plan B? What do you do?
Well, plan B is having all our volunteers ready. And, you know, we have our squeegees, you know, to push the water off. But the way the golf course was built, it drains really well. So, you know, we can get an inch of rain, and we could be back out playing within the hour the way the, you know, the golf course drains.
Plus a lot of wind. That helps, too. Drying out the golf course, right?
Yeah, a lot of wind will help dry it, you know, dry out the golf course and then make it more challenging for the player.
It should be exciting. I really appreciate it, Greg James. Thanks for taking the time, and continued success, and have a great week here at the Northern Trust.
Thank you, Ann.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and I am delighted to say hello to Sean Christopher Lewis, the executive chef, the assistant general manager here at Liberty National Golf Club in Jersey City, New Jersey. Sean, thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure, Ann. Thanks for having me.
There's so much to talk to you about because you are enjoying a rare combination of being both the executive chef here and the assistant GM, and that's pretty unheard of, right? I mean, how unusual is that?
I think it's sort of unusual, but there are some chefs that have, you know, gone into the realm of general management. So I'm one of very few to be in that circle, and very proud to be.
And you have been here at Liberty National since the clubhouse opened back in 2009. So that's a long time in this club's history. Talk a little bit about how you got here and what your experience has been like since you've been here.
Well, yeah, back in 2009, I came over with the gentleman, Martel Meyer, who was the general manager at the time, fell in love with the club, and how is it that you cannot? The Fireman family are just wonderful people to work for, and the membership, you know, going from about 50, 60 members to about 250 now, just wonderful people. So to be part of the growth of the brand, of the club, and to be involved with the membership and the great team we have here has been an exceptional experience.
Of course, you're talking about Paul Fireman, the co-founder here at Liberty National, with his son, I believe, and obviously the founder, former CEO of Reebok. And I remember, Sean, coming here even before the clubhouse was built, looking at the land, and it really was this decaying shoreline right by the water. And you know, everybody's wondering, well, how can they put a first-class golf club up here? But, I mean, the views are stunning with the Statue of Liberty right here in the port and the skyline of Lower Manhattan.
Yeah, it's Paul just definitely had the vision to really see that and the wherewithal to just see a project through of that size. Just an amazing job, and with Bob Kupp and Tom Kite, the designer, they've just done a spectacular job here and just a wonderful gift to the world of golf. Just amazing.
It's so amazing what they've done because, as you say, you know, it's on acreage that overlooks, you know, this incredible view, and it you know, wasn't the greatest. I mean, I would think it was the greatest real estate, but at the time, you know, who would have thought, right? But it just seemed like a no-brainer. But Tom Kite, obviously a U.S. Open champ back in 92, and Bob Kupp, who's been in just a renowned architect for years in the golf business, teamed up. And they describe it as kind of like the golf course is like a parkland links-style golf course.
Exactly. You know, and especially going to see it from an overview and just see the beautiful layout. We do have some trees, but it is sort of a lynx layout of the course. The land itself being a brown spot and just the way that you know, to treat the land, to treat the property, to have it, you know, regenerated life into it has just been amazing. So what they've done, I think, not only has been a great gift to the world of golf, but I think a real boost into Jersey City and revitalizing the shoreline. So a really amazing job with them.
Absolutely. And I'd love to talk to the chief agronomist to actually talk about, you know, that challenge and what they, how they were able to do that. So let's get back to Sean Christopher Lewis. So talk a little bit about your background. Did you always know you wanted to be a chef?
I'm not sure if I always knew, but I know that I loved cooking. You know, I grew up in a family of great cooks. My grandfather owned a bar and grill, and I would spend a lot of time at his side. And just when I was 12 years old, my first job was in a pizzeria. It was something I was, you know, working with dough in my hands. I was very passionate about it. So when it came time to really go on a career path, you know, it just seemed like it chose me. I really didn't choose that to become a chef. And, you know, I've always followed my gut instinct and my passion. And that's what led me into culinary and general management, just in the club business.
And you grew up where?
I grew up in Floral Park, New York, in Long Island.
Okay. Yeah. You are a Long Island guy. And isn't it great to be just doing your passion?
Yeah, it's you know, I've been very fortunate to grow professionally here at Liberty and be able to not only oversee food and beverage and be creative with the wine program, the cocktail and spirit program, which I'm really passionate about, but also get involved in the other areas of the club, and whether it's working with our, you know, an amazing team that we have here. You know, I lend support, but, you know, these men and women really are really the tops in their professions. Our head golf pro, Dan Schleichert, Greg James, you know, the head of agronomy. We just have a wonderful, wonderful team. And, of course, Lee Smith, our managing director. A wonderful ensemble of people to learn from and be part of.
Talk about your training, Sean, to do what you're doing now. What kind of training to not only as executive chef in the culinary world, but also as the as an assistant general manager? That's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, so my training is extensive. I feel like I'm I'll be a student forever. So I'm always, you know, whether it's with getting certified for as a sommelier, I'm working with the quartermaster sommeliers on that. Completed my level one bar 5 day, which is it's 5 days, but it's an immense amount of education during that time with some, you know, the most world renowned people in spirits and cocktails. So it's that I've done once, and I'm going back again for that. I've been part of the CMAA for, I think, about 18 years, and about 10 years ago, I really started to really focus on getting certified for club management. So I've done my manager and development program with them, with Jeff Riegler, a CCM, who's a wonderful, wonderful club manager. And as of last year, I've gotten certified for club manager. And yeah, it's about the journey for me. It's about the time you spend during these studies and the people you meet and the education you get. So I just continue to, you know, follow my passion, hope to share with others what I learned, because that's really what it's about for me, is really impacting others. So it's not only the members that we serve, but it's the teams that we lead and that we support. That's what I'm really passionate about as well. So.
And the expanded role, Sean, you know, it is rare, as we were saying, but is this something that you always wanted to do, or just the opportunity came about here at Liberty National?
Obviously, being with the club managers is something that I wanted to do, and I'm very happy and fortunate enough for it to be here at Liberty National. Not that I had to go somewhere else to pursue my passion. So it was just in the cards, as I like to say. Following that gut instinct and your passion, no matter what field you're in, I think it's really important. And I'm very fortunate to have a ownership here and a team that supports it.
And so as executive chef, you're overseeing, you know, all the food and beverage. And then as assistant GM, you really got involved with all operations of the club, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's that exposure to all operations. You know, I've been involved with all of our golf outings, our events. You know, I've basically worked with our team in booking them. And we have some really unique events, whether it's things with Barstool, the PGA Tour, and planning these, food and beverage and operations for the Northern Trust have been, a huge undertaking. This is my fifth PGA Tour event. And with the Barclays, I've done two, the President's Cup, and this is my second Northern Trust. So, that type of exposure is just, it takes you outside of the kitchen. So as much as I don't cook that much, and when I do, I really enjoy it. But I have a great, like I said, a great team that supports me to do what I enjoy doing. And yeah, and getting outside of the kitchen and getting exposure to other areas of the club.
How does this week when Liberty National is hosting a PGA Tour event, how does this week, say, differ from all the other weeks for you personally and in your duties here?
Well, what we do, it's just a refocus. So I think one of the most, exciting things for membership here when they're in the clubhouse is enjoying that personal style of service that they receive. Now, when we go to doing that for about 250 people a day to probably about 1,000 people a day, you just got to switch gears. And we're in different locations, and it's using, a team that has worked with you year after year. So we bring a lot of people back for this that share the same philosophy and culture. And it really works out well, because the Northern Trust people and the PGA Tour, the players and the families, they're all just, to me are just wonderful people. And it's the inspiration to really do, a fantastic job. Then we also, of course, have some of our members that, come back and they're part of the Liberty Club, which is a top-notch experience here at Liberty this week. So it's just that combined with the ownership being on site, it's just like a big party, it's hard not to have a good time even when you're working, 16, 18 hours a day.
Right. It's a huge party, but you have to ensure that everybody is having a great time, from the members to, all the people involved with the tournament, all the officials and VIPs and the players. Any kind of weird food requests from any of the stars who are here? I mean, you know, this is the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, so obviously the top 125 players are here. And any kind of different requests from any of these players? Any good stories from any of the pros who are here?
We haven't had that many, interesting requests. The guys like to eat healthy this week when they're playing. So we're kind of prepared for that. And, we do make those adjustments on the one-offs. When guys are in town and they want to go out, I'm more often than not than recommending restaurants for them to venture out into the city. So I've been talking to a couple of guys, giving them some secret low-key places that maybe only sit 10 people. Yeah, nice sushi place I have in mind. So there's those kind of things. I think Mr. Kite is in town this week, and one of the things I just created was a cocktail in his name. Yeah, so we did it, and it's on golf.com. You can check it out on the website. The Kite Collins, which is a blueberry lemon with almond Tom Collins. It's a spin on it. Yeah, it's a pretty cool article. And then the Tom Kite, which is almost like the Arnold Palmer, but it's a blueberry lemonade. So that's the Tom Kite. So I got to show him the article this morning, and it's the second time I made him well up. The second time I did that to him. This was the cocktail named after him. And of course, when I pulled out my set of 1979 original, brand new in the box, Wilson Tom Kite irons. I have a set at home. I brought them in to show them to him, and he got kind of emotional then. So Tom's just a wonderful, wonderful person, and to have him on site this week is just extremely special. So I hope you folks come out this week if there's any tickets left. I know we're really busy.
Wait a second. So you brought out the Tom Kite irons that you had in 79. He must have been thrilled with that, and he got two cocktails named after him. That's pretty great.
Yeah, he's wondering. It's funny, he came out today, and I said, Tom, I got something I want to show you. And he had this, purplish color shirt on. I said, and I think, I don't know why it could be more appropriate than you're wearing this shirt today. And I showed him the article, and you know, I sent it over to him, and he was just he said I'm almost speechless. He goes, you're making me blush. I'm like welling up. He really is. He's a really wonderful guy, and we have a tournament that Dan Schleichert and the golf team came up with called the Kite Cup, and you know that's that we hold in the fall. So that's like it's a big member tournament. So. We definitely pay homage to those who have put the time and the effort and the work into creating this wonderful and special club.
So you have the Tom Kite cocktails. How about, I know Phil Mickelson's a member here, Christy Kerr, Natalie Galbis was here. Do you have any other signature cocktails that you can tell us about?
We have lots of signature cocktails here, and we have a great team, and you know, in the beverage side that do a wonderful job. I try to get Mr. Mickelson to try some cocktails. He's more of a wine guy, you know, as is Christy. You know, so they like to stick with the wine, but once in a while we'll break out something with dry ice and smoke and bubbles. And I think I scared Phil when I showed him one. I was like, yeah, it was a tequila with strawberry and black pepper, and it was bubbling on the bar, and he's like, what is that? And is it going to hurt me? And I'm like, no. I try to get him to try it. He's more of a wine guy.
What was the name of that cocktail?
That was called the Red and Black. And that was strawberries muddled with basil, tequila, crushed black pepper, and topped with soda. Wonderful, refreshing cocktail.
Wow.
Yeah, really interesting.
I'm obviously hanging in the wrong place on the golf course. I should be at the bar.
Well, you're with the right guy, Ann. So maybe after this, we'll go have one.
We have to try it. So now talk about some of the signature dishes here at Liberty National.
Yeah, it's funny in club cuisine, and, you know, we've got a great reputation for our food program, and a lot of it has been in response to what membership likes. So we're not afraid to try new things, whether it comes with, you know, seasonality or, you know, working with techniques. But I think, you know, the bulk of it, you know, what people like to enjoy are it's really fun, casual food, but with the best ingredients. You know, and certain dishes will have their run. You know, we're on the downslope of a elephant ear veal chop that's been butterflied and, you know, with the bone, and it's one of these things. And going back to one of my passionate things, and we were talking about Marty Hackle earlier. And a couple of years ago, we're at a tournament, and Marty said to me in his very Marty fashion, "So, chef, last dish on earth, what's it going to be?" And I was like, "Honey, honest, Marty, I've never thought of it." I said, "Linguine with clams, fresh clams. That's my go-to. That's my dish I love to have when I'm ready to cheat and have some pasta." And he's like, "Great dish, great dish." So I've been making that a lot lately for members. They've been requesting it. So a lot of it is by request. So you know, while we have a menu, it's sort of a guide suggested, you know, what you could have. But a lot of times we're making what people want and request. So as a member, you come in, you kind of like, I'm thinking about this today. And that's what me and the team are doing. We're working on it. We're getting all these created dishes going almost to order.
So you're telling me that every dish is a signature dish, and it really depends on what the members want. And you, you're in the membership service business, so they get what they want, basically.
That's the way it goes. That's the way it goes. The menu is a result of what membership likes. So that's it.
Yeah, I'm very curious to hear about your passion for honeybees. You have a colony of honeybees here. I don't know where you're going to have to point it out to me here on the property at Liberty National. But tell me about, how did you get interested in bees?
I think I was stung a lot as a kid. We rely as a species, as humans, you know, 3/4 of our food supply is dependent upon pollination. So, I wanted to support the honeybee species and their health and you know, for the environment. So you know, a couple of years back, we decided to start the apiary here at Liberty. Not really so much to cultivate honey, although we do a little bit, but just really to tilt the scale in the environment and make sure that, we're out there and helping these bees thrive. So we had an assistant with an agronomy, and Greg James has been Been helping out a lot with that now. So we have colonies out on one of the holes here. It's kind of hidden, so it's not in anybody's way. And they're just wonderful. So I started studying for Cornell, taking a master beekeeper's certificate, you know, so just so that I could, you know, really understand what to do, when to do, how to troubleshoot. You know, when I joined the local bee club, and it's been a great learning experience so far. And you know, to go up to a hive and especially with someone who doesn't have that trained eye, and you just see bees flying around. But when you get in close and you look and you see what's going on, and you know, they're up and they got their butts up in the air and they're flapping their wings and they're all out there doing that, and you know, to explain that's they're sending out a signal for the foraging bees to come back, or you know, what to do if you know bees are robbing from a hive, you know, to troubleshoot. So it's very interesting to manage these colonies, and very rewarding to know that you're contributing to the environment, so and to nature. So it's you know, it's very I guess it gives us a great sense of pride, and I'm glad to share it. I bring lots of staff out there from time to time to enjoy it and to really be exposed to it.
You've just rattled off another degree. I mean, I think you're probably run out of wall space with all your certificates, right? All your degrees, Sean. But getting back to the honey, so you harvest the honey on property, obviously, and then what do you do with all the honey?
Yeah, that I had to learn to do, because my first time around, I harvested all this honey and scraped the wax, and it was, I had, my whole kitchen was a mess, and thankfully it was cold out and we weren't busy here. The honey we had gifted out to some people, and we had used some in within the house, and we leave a lot in the hive so that the bees can get through the winter. That's what they depend on for food. So you know, I think next year, and hopefully if we have a really good harvest, you know, it's just to continue doing the same. You know, some people, there is a health benefit to honey that's you know, especially local honey that hasn't been pasteurized or any of that added to it. So I think, you know, gifting that out and getting it to people that really want it, you know, members that really want it, be a great thing.
Such an interesting passion. What about bees? Is there anything, what surprised you most of all your education, you know, with doing this kind of thing with this colony of honeybees here? Any one thing that sticks out about bees that just surprised you?
Yeah, a lot of things surprised me about bees, and I'm going to try not to geek out about it. But, you know, geek out. You know, I think the communication role, I think, you know, the life cycle of a bee in the summertime is maybe 6-8 weeks at top. So, you know, there's always these new bees that are coming on. And how do they know, especially we're almost an urban environment, you know, being so close to New York City, and, you know, it's industrial around us. And so we made sure that we planted flowers. But to learn that when bees leave the hive, they circle around, they see where they're at, you know, when they're new, and then they venture out. And when they find a food source, they'll come back to the hive and they'll actually do a dance. And they'll show the rest of the bees where the food supply is. It's like a waggle dance that they call it. And, you know, that, so they share that information. And so when they go back out, and we talked about, you know, the bees sending out that Nazarov pheromone into the air to get the foraging bees to come back. But I've witnessed it. And, you know, watching them all go out and they raise their rear end in the air and they flap their wings, and it looks like an army of them out there. And you sit there and long enough, and I've shown people, soon enough you'll see foraging bees come in. They're bees with their legs loaded up with pollen, and it's really amazing to see the you know, how the eusocial and how they communicate with each other, and just I guess sort of similar to ants, but they're, you know, different. But it just really is really interesting, you know, their behavioral, you know, actions. So it just really surprised me.
So when you aren't in the restaurants or, you know, in the clubhouse here, we know where to find you. You're observing all those bees and probably learning a lot, you know, a lot more just by watching them. I mean, I just think it's fascinating. There's a club closer to where this radio station is based in Southampton, Sabonic. They also have a colony of bees that they cultivate out there, and they harvest honey as well. Do you know anything about other clubs that do this, the same thing as you?
Yeah, so Anthony over at Sabonic, and I know they do that. Anthony's the chef over there, and Troy, the GM, know them well. And, you know, I know over at Piping Rock, they're over there, and I think that's kind of, you know, it's encouraged, and I think chefs always have that point because they understand really the food supply and what it means and how that balance. We need to weigh the scale so that it thrives and continues to do so. So I'm so happy to hear about, you know, when other clubs are doing it, and I hope to, you know, even with my team, you know, to inspire someone, you should do it. You know, if you have the opportunity, maybe not now, maybe in a year, in a couple of years, at least we're planting a seed for someone to think about it and hopefully do it in the future.
So I asked you this earlier. Do you have? I know you said you play a little golf. How much golf can you play here? I mean, it's at your fingertips here, but I'm sure you're very, very busy. How often do you get out to play Liberty National?
Every morning at 7 a.m. No.
Wouldn't that be great? I definitely want your job.
There's the rare occasion when I'll get to go out on a day that we're closed. And, you know, sometimes it's funny. We, you know, beekeeping. And when I'm out there on 17 and, you know, I come out in my bee suit, I've encountered members and they're like, take a shot. I'm like, all right, we're about 100 yards out from the green. So I got to take the bee suit off at least. And sometimes I'll put it on the green, but I think you know, having a great privilege to play here once in a while, it's really special. So if I do come out, I'll take a friend that who's wanted to come out once in a while, and I've hosted a couple of Wounded Warriors that wanted to play, and you know, just sort of kind of share that special experience with someone who would really appreciate it. You know, so that's tends to be the one thing, the Wounded Warriors, and you know, a lot of them I connected through with Tunnels to Towers, and you know, they're great men and women that have sacrificed a lot for our country. So any way I can kind of give back to them, I'm more than happy to do.
Are those charity events here, Sean?
Yes. So Tunnels to Towers, we do. That's one 9/11 based. The other one is Heart 9/11. Both organizations, you know, continue to do amazing work with disaster relief, with still supporting first responders, you know, in the, you know, an unfortunate event that a fallen officer or firefighter, you know, you'll see the mortgage getting paid off. You know, Frank Siller does Frank's on a walk right now from the Pentagon to Ground Zero. You can check that out on Tunnels to Towers. So, you know, they're just... you know, great people doing wonderful things for others. So, you know, I try to do my part, however small it is.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my dear friend Diane DeLucia and Golf Kitchen. They've been very involved here. Talk about your connection to Golf Kitchen.
Absolutely, yes. So Diana, who's, you know, the owner and the president of Golf Kitchen magazine, and you know, she is, you know, I've known Diana for about 10 years, and she does an amazing job with her publication, and we've kind of joined up in creating Clubhouse Cocktails, and which you know, been featuring our cocktail program, and you know, featuring some of the other great clubs' cocktail program. And I think in many ways trying to raise the bar, you know, trying to get everybody to really elevate the experience. You know, when you go back about 5, 10, 15 years ago, club dining maybe had a stigma to it, you know, that it was just you know, almost institutional, and it's not. You know, there's a lot of incredible chefs, you know, service people, sommeliers, and the cocktail programs are starting to grow as well. So we like to, you know, see that and, you know, encourage it to grow even more.
The caliber of culinary at these private clubs around the country is outstanding. And as you say, it probably, this is something that's probably occurred, what, in the last decade? And if so, why do you think that's the case?
I think just the, you know, the American diet, you know, and what they want to eat and how they like to eat. And, you know, it's something that's looked at now. You know, I know that every club, and whether it's the hamburger, and you're always going to have to make a hamburger and a club sandwich, and you have to want to do it. So for me, it's, you know, it was being a chef has always been about what you're making. I think when you get into being a club chef, it's more about who you're making it for. So there's that connection to the membership, and that's really for me what really drives me. So if it's a hamburger, club sandwich, a wrap, or if we're doing a torchon au foie gras or something that's really technical and kind of really high end, you know, to me, they're all as important. You know, it's really who's on the receiving end and just that they're getting the top level that they can receive.
Well, absolutely. A very discerning clientele. And so I'm sure that's what motivates you, being at this level in the private club industry. It's challenging, I'm sure, but it seems like that's what you thrive on.
Absolutely. So not only, you know, challenging, you know, you have some members that are, you know, that are in the business. They're a 15-minute ride from some of the greatest restaurants and bars in the world. And we've even hosted, you know, some of the top chefs here. You know, I've had Eric Repair here. We host a mentor, which is Thomas Keller's foundation. So we had Thomas Keller, James Kent, you know, and a bunch of, you know, Danielle Ballou was here. So a lot of top level chefs, you know, out for the day to experience a golf outing. So, you know, you want to make sure that each meal, each event that you do is just spot on. You know.
Any more stories about some of the pros or celebrities that you've been able to connect with while you've been here at Liberty National?
You know, we have, a ton of celebrities, and some are, you know, they're all celebrities in my book. You know, every one of these members. That's how I look at it. You know, we have lots of great stories. You know, or at least I do. You know, Mark Wahlberg doing, I believe it was his premiere for The Other Guys with Will Ferrell, and Brooke Shields was here with her husband, and we just did a really nice private dinner. In which a lot of wine was consumed and a great time was had by all. Mark's got some of the greatest friends that a guy could have, and they like to have a great time. So I won't get into the shenanigans that were going on, but a lot of fun. You know, Christy Kerr being, you know, she's an amazing golfer, an amazing person, her and her husband, you know, have been here, and Natalie's been a guest of them, Gulbis, and, you know, I miss Natalie because we used to have our putting contests once in a while on the greens. But, you know, they're all just wonderful people. I've been over the past, I think it's 13 years, really blessed to have met a bunch of wonderful people, celebrity and non, all the same.
Golf brings so many amazing personalities together. It really, truly is the most incredible sport and industry. Last question, Sean. I'm going to put you on the spot. It's Northern Trust Week. Who are you picking to win? Who's going to hoist the trophy on Sunday afternoon?
Okay, so this is really a split decision. You know, I'm a huge Phil Mickelson fan, but Louis Oosthuizen, I guess, is yeah. He's been so close. I'm rooting for him. I really want him. So if it's not Phil, it's Lewis. I got to have it. Yeah, that's my pick.
Okay, well, Phil winning magically the PGA Championship, which was amazing. The only guy at the age of 50 to win a major championship. And I agree with you. Louis Oosthuizen is always a safe pick. He's come in second so many times. You just want him to close the deal. So, Louis, that's a great choice. Sean Christopher Lewis, thank you so much for spending some time with us, and all the best. Continued success.
Thanks so much, Ann, and looking forward to a great week.
My thanks to Sean Christopher Lewis, to Greg James, and to Delaney Hefner in the studio. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. I'll talk to you next Saturday on Sports Interview with Ann Liguori.